morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We're going to be discussing Social Security today, right, Mike?
We are. We are talking to Max Richmond from the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, the National Committee to Preserve. So he's sitting there in Washington, D.C. Good morning, Max.
Yeah. How are you guys?
Very, very well. I just want to mention, I told you I was going to do a little speech this morning. I want to talk about how the communities that chasm that this show goes out, Democratic Perspective goes out to. We're talking Rimrock. We're talking Camp Verde. We're talking Middle Verde. We're talking Lake Montezuma. We're talking Cottonwood, of course. We're talking Sedona. We're talking Jerome. We're talking Clarkdale. And this is all within, in fact, I think I've been in almost every one of those communities in the last week. I mean, it's just a region, and I'm a regional kind of guy, but lots of us are. And Social Security and Medicare are lifeblood to so many of our folks. When we started this show, when we started Democratic, this is Steve Williamson's brainchild of 6 or 7, 8 years ago now. And one of the things that was top on our list was to bring out some truth about Social Security and Medicare, because the Koch brothers, the right wing, the Republicans, Fox News was really building up the lies at that time. So thank goodness for people like yourself. Now we can get into the show. What do we got to talk about?
We've got a lot of things to talk about. One of the things I was reading in a newspaper in the New York Times was that when we were young, everybody there, the last part of your career, Mike, was your big earning years, right? And now what seems to have happened, Max, is that toward the end of their career, a lot of people's permanent employment collapses, and they work as contract workers. They work for half of what they've made before. And so they've calculated they're getting their Social Security based on continuing this, the more prosperous employment. And then what happens is things become shaky when they get older. Is there anything can be done about that, or how significant is that in terms of Social Security payouts and so forth and so on?
Well, you know, I think what you're describing just reinforces how important it is to make sure Social Security is solvent way into the future, because so many people will rely on it for so much of their income. And I hope we can talk about some of the proposals that are being discussed that would do just that. But you mentioned some of the myths, I call them, about Social Security, and I hear them all the time. The program is broke, it's bankrupt, younger people feel it won't be there for them, and that's wrong. And what that discussion, the tenor of that, all of that does is it discourages support for the program, which is not helpful, because we need to do whatever we can to make sure, in light of the circumstances you described, the program is maintained in terms of solvency. It's there for not just current retirees, but for future generations. I've done hundreds of town hall meetings, quite a few in Arizona over the years. And younger people that do come, and they do come to these meetings, they're very skeptical about the program being around for them. They feel they're more likely to see a UFO than to see a Social Security check. And that's wrong, and we can fix Social Security. It is solvent. The trustees tell us that everyone who is expecting benefits will receive them until 2035. And at that point, there'll be a shortfall. And it won't mean it's bankrupt. It will mean that only 80% of benefits would be available. That can be fixed, and it needs to be fixed.
Well, let's talk about. I just saw somewhere that your committee to protect and preserve Social Security, HR House Resolution 1170, the Social Security Expansion Act. So we're sitting here on Democratic perspective, and we're talking about running out of money, and the next breath we're talking about the Democrats expanding Social Security for millions and millions of Americans. Is that right?
Well, the bill that you're referring to that we do support, it's called the Social Security 2100 Act. It's H.R. 860. It has 206 or 208 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives. It's introduced by Congressman John Larson of Connecticut at the beginning of the year, and it has a tremendous amount of support and traction. I've testified on the bill twice in the last few months in the House Ways and Means Committee. And what the bill does is it extends the program's solvency, ability to pay full benefits for the rest of the century. And it does it not by cutting benefits, which are pretty modest as it is. It does it by bringing more revenue into the program in what I think is a fair and very responsible way. The main it does this in two ways. One is by adjusting the cap on wages, the amount of wages subject to the payroll tax. Right now, this year, it's $132,900. After that amount is earned in wages, there's no more payroll tax.
Right.
Why? Why do we have to stop it there? Now, we would, as an organization, the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, we would prefer to have that cap eliminated altogether. But politically, Congressman John Larson has chosen a slightly different path, and I think correct one, in terms of getting something accomplished. He would keep the cap at its current level. It changes a little bit every year.
Right.
But he would commence payroll tax again at $400,000 and above in wages. That would bring in enough money to make the program sound financially for the rest of this century. It would bring in enough money to increase the minimum benefit by about $70 a month, which may not seem like a lot, but if you're living entirely on Social Security, it's a pretty big deal.
It's a heap, yeah.
And it would improve the formula for determining what a COLA is, the cost of living adjustment. That's the increase that is applied to the monthly check, and that's announced every fall for the following year. And it's pretty modest. And some years there's been, I think, in the last 10 years, it was zero for three of those years because the formula that is used to determine inflation is flawed, and it results in a COLA that does not actually reflect inflation as it impacts a Social Security beneficiary, an older person.
Let me interrupt you, Max, and say exactly that, that the formula that they're determining increases on changed, and it is it's complicated. It bases its calculations on things that seem that are subject to change and don't reflect, as you just said, real economic increases, cost increases in people's lives. So we end up, no Social Security increases for three out of the last 10 years,
right.
And anybody on Social Security really looks forward to that, 1.5%, 2.5%, 3%, over the course of 10-15 years, then you get a significant increase, but that little bit every year really helped, and this new formula takes that away.
Well, you're absolutely correct. You've obviously done your research. The current formula measures the change in inflation from year to year as it applies to a wage earner. It's called the CPI, Consumer Price Index W. And what we need to do and what the Larson bill does, H.R. 860, is it applies a different formula and it focuses on the change in the cost of those goods and services that an older person relies on. Because, after all, that's the point of the COLA, is to make sure that a Social Security beneficiary does not lose ground because inflation of the way inflation impacts them. So, for example, those 3 years the COLA was zero, that was largely due to the fact that gasoline prices dropped dramatically, and that is such a big component of the current formula that it drove the COLA down to zero. And CPIE, which is the COLA, the formula that is in the Larson bill, would put more weight on those kinds of things that seniors rely on, like health care. And you know, Medicare is a great program. It doesn't cover everything. It doesn't cover dental. It doesn't cover vision. It doesn't cover hearing. There's a lot of out-of-pocket costs still associated with Medicare. So the formula that if the consumer price index elderly would fix that by looking at that market basket of goods and services that seniors rely on so that the COLA will actually impact inflation as it applies to them. And that's something that I worked on this. You know, I was staff director of the U.S. Senate Committee on Aging a number of years ago. And we introduced a bill and got something through, our chairman did, that would, we tried to get a CPI put into place. The best we could do is get it as an experiment, and it's never been applied. So that was in 1988. So almost, 31 years ago that it was instituted as an experiment, but not fully developed.
And how much would the change in a sort of basket that's used to measure expenses for the elderly, how much would this change Social Security, say, I think it was very high this last year, at least for in recent years, what, 2.8% or something?
Right.
Now,
The difference would not be dramatic. It would be, you know, maybe less than a percent, maybe okay. A little bit more than a percent. But the point is, whatever that amount is, that increase, that would be applied with the new formula, that is built into the base. So the following year, that amount is larger, and it's like interest in a savings account. It's cumulative. So it, while it may not make a difference in the first year, over time, it's gonna add quite a bit of money, you know, a couple of thousand dollars in the out years for a Social Security beneficiaries a year. So it's a small step, but it will have a dramatic impact over the life of a beneficiary who is collecting Social Security.
So 208 sponsors. I mean, that's a lot of support. So once again, listeners, at least there's a chance with that much support, that much sponsorship. There's a shot at this because to reiterate, to review here, just to fix Social Security, Max Richmond, who we're talking to this morning, advocates no cap. Some of his people in his committee advocate a $400,000 cap. This is how much, when you take Social Security out of a salary, out of a wages, we're talking right now we're capped at 132,000. Even just raising it to 400,000 funds Social Security for a long, long, long time. So you can fix Social Security with that simple act. Eliminating the cap makes things even better.
The other thing, Mike, is to remember that they stopped collecting Social Security at 132.9, and that goes up. But there's a gap where they don't increase between a formula for the current cap and $400,000. So that you're not paying Social Security if you make $140,000 on the last part of that. And you don't pay it again until you get to $400,000. It's amazing that that little bit of a change where you don't pay taxes for hundreds of thousands of dollars of extra income would actually sustain Social Security pretty much permanently.
Yeah. You know, when I testified at the Ways and Means Committee, there was a bit of a discussion about the cap, and the reason we have a lack of resources, funding in the program, is because in the last 30 years, the disparity in wages between the average wage earner and the high wage earner has grown so dramatically. It used to be, back in the early 80s, about 92-93% of wages were covered by the payroll tax. Now it's closer to about 80 or 81%, and that's because the very wealthy have been making so much more money. So, you know, even if we went back to, and I'm not advocating this, but as an example, even if we went back to what historically was the amount of wages subject to the payroll tax, that would automatically, right away, lift it from 132 to about 180 or 190,000.
So what
that's,
we want,
that's one of the reasons we have this problem, and it can be fixed by, I've talked to a lot of people who make quite a bit of money. They're fine with paying a little bit more into Social Security because they know how important it is to not just to seniors. Well, you know, one of the things I try to impress on younger people who are so skeptical about the program being there for them when they retire, I point out it's there for them right now. If you are a 27-year-old worker with a spouse and two children, you have right now about $500,000 in value in life and disability insurance because Social Security is there for you before you retire. And a lot of people aren't aware of that benefit, survivor benefits, spousal benefits, children's benefits. Millions of children get by because they have a parent who became disabled or died young, and Social Security is there for them. So it's insurance for families, and I think that value needs to be emphasized as often as possible.
It also seems, Max, in talking to you and talking with Mike beforehand, it's awfully easy to solve the Social Security shortfall. I mean, there are a dozen different formulas. What is lacking, I guess, is the political will. If it's so easy to solve this, and you know, with like one bill, why don't we solve it? I guess that's my stuttering question is, why isn't it solved if it's this easy to solve it in a dozen different ways?
Yeah, well, you know, political will is in short supply in Washington, which is unfortunate. But you know, the pushback on the Larson bill is well, you're going to be raising taxes, and
of course, tariffs,
you know,
don't raise taxes.
The way this is done, I think, is in such a fair way and does so much for our society. For beneficiaries, a third of Social Security beneficiaries are non-retired workers, the ones I just mentioned, survivors, spouses, children, disabled. And it's a program that helps our country dramatically. And if it can be fixed in a fair way, which I think this bill does, I think we ought to pursue it. There's a companion in the Senate, Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut, Senator Van Hollen of Maryland have introduced a bill. We're going to be focused on trying to get increased support for this in the U.S. Senate, and I'm hoping that your two senators in Arizona, being very aware of the high proportion of seniors in your state, will be open to endorsing the bill as we try to move it in the Senate.
It would benefit everybody in the state in the sense that seniors would have more money, Mike, and they would be able to spend more money. It would protect them.
Well, I'm pretty sure Senator McSally and Senator Sinema listen to this show, so you get that, Senators. We want to make sure that you support, pick this up in the Senate, because I'm going to back up what Max just said from a Forbes magazine article today. Forbes is not exactly a left-wing news a source, by the way. One third of all workers earn less than $12 an hour, and 42% earn less than $15 an hour. I have no, it would, and that's just for, to do the math, that's about $25,000 a year for the lower number and about $31,000 a year. So imagine trying to raise a family on $25,000 or $31,000 a year, or even as a Social Security, but those people are contributing so much less into the system, as you pointed out, from 92 or 93%. To 81%, because they are just making less money. That they didn't keep, if they would have kept with inflation, I saw a meme the other day, which they'd be making $33 an hour. At that point, Social Security would be fine. To prevent, the Forbes article says, to prevent economic anxiety, you need $100,000 a year in the USA. I don't, and nobody
mean
in
as
this
a,
room.
As a current income. I was thinking too, the statistics for women, Mike, using Social Security as their only source of income are pretty astonishing. They're in worse shape than men because
at
least, yeah, because they, often they haven't worked as much in the, or haven't made as much money for whatever reason. So that the Social Security, I think, is most of their income for 55% of the women, getting Social Security, some figure like that. I didn't manage to write it down, so I don't have it in front of me.
Well,
so,
you raised such two really excellent points that I would like to respond to. One is when Social Security benefits are paid out to a beneficiary, that money, as you one of you, I don't know which one, pointed out, that goes right back into the economy.
Right.
I mean, people that are relying, so many people rely on Social Security for all or most of their cash income. They're not going to invest that. They have to spend that to live. So that money goes right back into the economy. We did a study a couple of years ago that shows that there's a multiplier effect to the economy in every congressional district in every state, because when that money is spent, It enhances those providers of services and goods to those Social Security beneficiaries. So it's not just those billions of dollars that go into the hands of beneficiaries. It's the businesses that benefit when that money flows through the economy. And the point about women, such an important point, the Social Security 2100 Act is especially important to women because, as you correctly pointed out, women, they make less money, which isn't right. I think it's still about a little over 80 cents to the dollar for a man in a comparable job. So they're putting less money into the program, which means their benefits are lower. Moreover, women often leave the workforce to have children, to take care of an elderly parent, and during those years, they're not contributing. So they have fewer quarters that they're paying into the program, which again reduces their benefits. On top of that, women live longer than men. Right. They're going to rely on Social Security for a longer period of time, and which is, I believe, another reason why it's so important to make sure the program is sound, especially for women who will need it for a longer period of time because they are living longer.
That's exactly what we're talking about this morning, these kind of expanding Social Security, not cutting it. We have Republican office seekers in Arizona that are campaigning on eliminating or cutting Social Security. And, of course, it's in the modern age, in the Internet age, every crazy person, every wacko gets their crazy comments repeated. Before, it wasn't quite so. No responsible reporter and certainly no responsible news source would be repeating these crazy things. But what we're hearing these things now, and I think sometimes we give them a little too much weight.
The kind of report that scares people, Max, is a recent one which said that the cost of Social Security will exceed its income in 2020 for the first time since 1982. I know people think that it's always been exceeding its income, but it hasn't. But it will start doing that in 2020 if nothing's done. Is that, you think that's correct?
Well, there will be a point in 2035, if nothing is done, there will be insufficient revenue to pay full benefits. The reason we get to 2035 without any changes, which I'm not advocating, is because there is a reserve in the program. It's the Social Security Trust Fund. In the early 80s, the last time there were major changes to the program, Congress realized that the baby boomers will be entering retirement, and so the fund through payments was built up. I think it's about $2.9 trillion now, so that money is applied to those years when not enough money will come in. In 2035, with no changes, there will be not enough money to pay full benefits from payroll taxes, from the trust fund, from the interest on the bonds that are held by the government on those $2.9 trillion. And that's why we don't have a crisis. We don't have a program that's bankrupt. You know, the only way, when I'm confronted with the comment that its program is bankrupt, and, you know, frankly, back in the early 2000s when President Bush embarked on his campaign to privatize the program, the way that was portrayed was not helpful, because the word was, this program is broke, there's no money there, it's bankrupt. The only way there would be no money in Social Security is if we had 100% unemployment and nobody was paying into the program. So that's not going to happen. There is a shortfall that we will realize in 2034, which is why it's so important to make these changes sooner rather than later, because the longer we wait, the more dramatic those changes will have to be.
I guess, Max, and I think Mike and I have talked about this, is I see what you're doing, which will make Social Security pay out better for all retirees and also for people on disability. I see it as an improvement in the program, but what you're doing is very practical in a lot of ways, sort of conservative and cautious. But is there a way we could get Social Security so it paid out substantially more benefits? Because more and more people, at least in Arizona, are depending on Social Security as their primary source of income, often their only source of income. They spend their last years without accumulating any pension. Many of them never had a pension to start with. And so they're working, you know, they're working older. If you have a job you love, well, that's fine. But there is a real problem with even improving Social Security. It won't be enough to cover a lot of people's expenses.
Just let me interject here. We're talking to Max Riskman from the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, located in D.C. What he does and what his organization does is advocate to do exactly what the title says, preserve Social Security and Medicare, and important work he does. And we try to have him on as often as we can to discuss these things. Like we're talking about, it's not running out of money. It can be preserved. There are going to be some changes, and hopefully, with any common sense at all, there'll be some expansion, because, as we talked about, it is one of the biggest boosts you can give to an economy. The Forbes article I'm talking about, and many others, by the way, are talking about how the economy isn't booming. It may be booming if you're a billionaire in Maryland somewhere, but it's not booming for the rest. It's certainly not booming if you're an 83-year-old woman living in Cottonwood, Arizona, on Social Security, trying to pay rent that keeps going up.
So, Max, is there any, I guess, support for really expanding Social Security so it would be more helpful for people, particularly people who need it the most? Or are we pretty much stuck with just improving this program around the margins and actually the core benefits. What you want to do is improve core benefits. But improving those core benefits with all the cost of living changes that you're advocating, which make a lot of sense, that still won't really raise Social Security to the kind of income that people get in Europe on retirement.
Well, I think realistically, if we could get the Larson bill, H.R. 860, Social Security 2100 Act, passed into law, it would be a dramatic first step. And really the last major change in nearly 40 years. So, you know, there are other things, other proposals that I think are important that we are also working on. I mentioned the fact that women receive lower benefits often because they made less money to pay into the program and because they left the workforce to raise families and care for an elderly relative, so they don't put in as many quarters. There's a proposal I think that would do quite a bit to fix that, and I don't have the bill number in front of me, but it's a caregiver credit. In other words, there's a formula. If a woman or anybody leaves the workforce to raise a family, care for an elderly person, that those years in which that person is not putting into a program, there'd be a formula that would be applied that would substitute the number of quarters that are lacking in developing a Social Security benefit. That would go a long way. But, you know, what you mentioned is so important a minute ago. Social Security was originally, for years, talked about as one leg of a three-legged stool, the others being private savings and pensions. And as again, you pointed out, defined benefit pensions have largely disappeared, and people aren't saving enough to live in comfort.
I have those stats too from the Forbes article.
Yeah, I read that Forbes article. I think I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
And one of the things I might mention is we have embarked on a campaign called Delay and Gain. Mm. And we're trying to get information out to the public about the value of waiting to collect benefits if you can until you reach full retirement age. You know, you can collect Social Security starting at 62, but your benefits are reduced dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Most people now have to wait till 66. It will be 67 for everybody in a few years. And if you can wait to collect benefits until you're 70, you're going to have a much larger benefit. And whatever that benefit is, if you start at 62, 66, or 70, that's going to be the amount you receive for the rest of your life, and that's the amount the COLA is based on. So, you know, I realize that some people don't have the option. They don't have a job. They don't have their health is not good enough to continue working. And I'm not telling anybody when to start collecting Social Security, but we've looked at some survey results. 47% of the people surveyed are not aware that if you start collecting at 62 before your full retirement age, you're going to receive a much lower benefit. So we have a pilot project in five communities around the country. We're hoping to expand that to get information out through earned media like this and through paid radio ads and other ways of communicating to make sure people are aware that if they are able to wait, they're going to have a larger benefit, and that's going to be the benefit they'll receive as long as they're alive.
Well, that's true. If you are able to wait, but that's kind of a key phrase there. then there's some payoff for that, and that's a, that sounds like
some of us weren't able to do that. Sounds you know, like, and like. 62, we started collecting benefits because we had a drop in income, and that collecting benefits then kept us closer to our previous income.
Where's our Tom O'Halloran, the congressional district one on this? Is he a co-sponsor? Do you know?
Who is that?
Tom O'Halloran is our.
I know Congressman O'Halloran. We supported him in his last campaign. I don't have the list in front of me. I hope he is.
Okay, I believe.
I hope he listens to your program or his staff does, and he signs up. If he isn't, I don't know.
Okay, that's fine. I believe he is. So once again, folks, if you're looking to contact your senators and your congressmen about something positive and something that's important to you, H.R. 860, is that
H.R. 860.
H.R. 860, and we're calling it Social Security 2100, just what we like, confusing numbers, but that's okay. Social Security 2100, H.R. 860, you want to tell your congressman and your senator to support these things. So you can sound like you know what you're talking about. You can reference the bill directly and say, look, we want to expand this stuff. This will really impact the economy. This will grow things. This will improve things here in real time instead of staffing or stuffing Cayman Island bank accounts.
And, folks, if you can give the exact bill, and Michael repeated again,
yes,
it tells your congressman or your senator that you're really following the issue. It's great to tell them that you need to increase in Social Security, you need these improvements. But if you can actually mention a bill when you write or call them, that has impacts of showing that you're following this thing closely. Mike, so what's that bill again? Let's give folks one more.
Steve is right. If you know what you're talking about, believe it or not, even in this sort of situation, you actually get more attention. It's called the Larson Bill, H.R. 860, Social Security 2100. You wanna encourage your representative to support it and actively support it. So tell us about, Max, you're gonna toddle off to a board meeting here after you finish this exciting conversation. What's on the agenda?
Well, we're meeting. It's not a board meeting, but we're meeting with Congressman Larson to look at some strategy for moving this bill. He believes there will be a vote on the bill in the House before the August recess, and then the next step is to try to get traction over in the Senate. So we're going to be meeting with him this afternoon, and with the chair of our advisory board, who is former Senator Tom Harkin, to look at how we can generate some support for this bill in the U.S. Senate.
So, folks, there's nothing like Tom Harkin's walking into this meeting saying, hey, you know, I'm hearing from Republican senators and Republican congressmen that they're getting calls and letters and texts and tweets from their constituency that they really have learned about this bill. They think and they recognize the impact. They're not buying the Fox News crap that Social Security is going broke. They're not buying it that it's the reason for the deficit. You know, massive tax cuts to the wealthy is reason for the deficit, not Social Security.
The problem is that so many Republican senators and congressional people have sworn not to raise taxes under any circumstances. This is an increase in taxes that I think almost no Republican actual people would object to.
Well, take
if
that
they
in.
Understood what it was.
Take that
but
in.
If you have this absolute rule that you won't raise taxes, that you have to reach past that or get past that.
The tariffs have raised taxes more. Trump's stupid, ill-advised tariffs have raised taxes on the people sitting in this room and every room in the United States more than Social Security ever thought of. These taxes directly impact the businesses and individuals who do anything trade anywhere. We're talking food. We're talking goods from Mexico, China, all sorts of things. So these are taxes on. We get taxed two ways here. So a little. I mean,
but
no, that's.
But
a
they
real
don't
tax.
See it, consider those taxes, and I think that the heavy lifting that Max and Representative Larson has to do is and former Iowa Senator Harkin is to get enough Republican votes in the Senate to get this very modest, very conservative, really change through. I mean, that's the real problem is, I don't know, Max, good luck.
Well, you know, I think the reason we'll succeed is because Social Security has such overwhelming support, not just Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, not any one of them, but all people of all political persuasions. And all the surveys we've done over time show that overwhelming numbers, up to 80-85% of folks of all political persuasions, support improving and securing the Social Security program, even if it means paying more taxes. People are willing to do that. They may not be willing to do it for some reason that they can't relate to, but everybody has someone, even if it's not themselves, who's relying or will rely on Social Security. And it's so important to the future of every family that I think it's it will get the support as long as it's being done in a fair way. And at the town meetings I've gone to, you know, I ask, and there are 60, 70, 100 people, they're okay with bringing more revenue into the program in a way that is reasonable and fair. And, you know, I use this example. I won't name the person because I got into a little trouble once when I did it. But there's a very famous basketball player who makes so much money, and he probably deserves to make a lot of money, but he makes so much money, he stops paying payroll tax. He's reached that $132,000 cap halfway through the first quarter of the first game of the basketball season. The rest of that quarter, the game, the season, the playoffs, the championship, no more payroll tax.
I bet that
basketball player would be willing to at least pay for the whole quarter.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk. We focused on Social Security Day, and rightfully so. And we know, and I think we all sort of instinctively shied away from Medicare because there's so much talk about health care and Medicare for all. But before we leave, Max, I want you to, since you're on the committee to preserve and in this Washington D.C. committee, say give us some news on Medicare.
Well, I'd be glad to. If anybody who's interested in getting more information on the delay and gain idea that I was talking about, to understand the dynamics and the difference between starting collecting at 62 or waiting, should go to the website we've set up, delayandgain.com, and they can get that information. Or they can go to our website, ncpssm.org, and be connected to that. I think that we have not taken a position on Medicare for All. We're still trying to figure out what that would do to the Medicare program, how it would impact our members who are almost all on the Medicare program. So we have not taken a position. But I think that the biggest thing, change that would help the Medicare program, two things. Mandate the government to negotiate for the best price for prescription drugs.
Amen.
The pharmaceutical companies. That would drive down the cost of the prescription drugs, not just for seniors, but it would impact overall costs. Right now, the government is prohibited by law.
Hit the second one, Max. We're running out of time.
And the other thing is, Medicare is a great program. but it doesn't cover hearing, dental, or vision.
Right.
And those, there are proposals to expand it, to improve it in those ways.
Excellent, excellent. Listen, folks, we've been talking to Max Richman from the Committee to Preserve, and I'm going to say expand Social Security and Medicare, even though that's not it. You can look it
You're
up.
You're rewriting their name.
We're changing the name of your committee. We want to thank you, as always, for great information on two really important programs. Don't forget to check out this podcast on Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org. You can listen to our shows, BVID.org. Thank you, folks.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.